Yeah, it was a really bad moment for me because I feel that at that point is when execution matter more than any pitch you can throw, you know? So I feel that whenever I miss my execution of my pitchers, like in that moment, it's just like gets to me. But what I can do is just keep working on it and just make those adjustments real quick.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
That was the voice of Adber Alzolay after his start the other night. Thank you to The Score for providing that clip. And we are back inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, for another hour of fun. With Bruce Levine, I'm David Haw. And Bruce, you know, we are pleased now to go out to the guest hotline brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, the home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find Craig Breslow, the Cubs assistant general manager and pitching coordinator. Good morning, Craig. Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, it has been a difficult stretch here lately for the Cubs. We heard from Jed Hoyer the other day, but I think that as we pivot here at midseason near the All-Star break, Craig, just when you look at the young Cub pitchers, we heard from Adber Alzolay, who has played a big role in this rotation the first half and certainly has a promising future ahead of him. How would you assess the young Cub pitching prospects and the ones who might be on the verge of joining the major league roster, guys like Justin Steele, and where you are as an organization in terms of developing that talent?
Sure. I think it's exciting. I think it's promising. But I think there's still obviously room to develop. You know, I think we saw the emergence of a handful of guys in the first half here, guys that maybe we didn't intend on counting upon to make such sizable contributions, but obviously we're certainly fortunate and glad that they did. And I think it's been a really valuable proof of concept that what we're attempting to do, what is, you know, kind of seeping into the lower levels of our development apparatus, is working. So we'll certainly continue on this path, and hopefully there will be others to join. You know, Justin and Keegan, we saw Tommy Nance and Brad Wick has taken a step forward, and a handful of others very soon.
Craig, where are you at as a individual who runs a good portion of the organization and the organization's theory on openers? The Cubs, it appears, will have a good opportunity in the second half to look at Steele back in a role as a starting pitcher. That's already been alluded to by Jed Hoyer. And in that role, having been the arm shortened up for a while as a reliever, needs to get stretched out. Where are you at as far as somebody like Steele in the second half, you know, looking like a 2-3-inning pitcher to start a ball game?
Yeah, well, I think where I am personally, and you know, there's obviously a broader conversation to take place within the organization, is that I think we need to be open-minded, you know, about employing creativity to solve, you know, a problem. And it has been no secret. I don't think anyone has run from kind of the struggles to develop homegrown starting pitching. And I do think there's reason for optimism in, you know, a handful of the names that we had just mentioned, as well as kind of another wave in the minor leagues. But you know, I think we've had some conversations about, you know, our willingness to be creative. And you know, it could turn out that the best solution to this problem isn't, you know, five starters that we're counting on to pitch, you know, into the sixth or seventh inning. But if we got that, we'd be equally happy, I assure you.
We're talking with Craig Breslow, the assistant general manager for the Cubs and pitching coordinator. And Craig, we heard from Adber Alzolay coming into the segment, and we have watched him over 15 starts in the first half, and he's on pace for a right around 150 innings. I just wonder, we heard from Jed earlier this week in terms of what direction this team will be headed in terms of looking to be open for trades and what the second half represents. Does that change the way you may use him, Adber Alzolay, in the second half? Will you be more, you know, conservation-minded in terms of his innings and how to approach his starts and how often he's used?
Well, I think, you know, our role, certainly, you know, David Roth and Tommy and the rest of the pitching infrastructure's role is to balance, you know, kind of the health of the organization in the short term and kind of the medium and longer term. You know, I think we will need to be mindful of Advert's workload. I think to claim that there is a hard cap right now would be foolish. But I think that we should, you know, I kind of come back to this idea of being creative. We should be creative with controlling the workload. And that involves more than, like I said, just attaching a number to his volume this season. I think we have a number of resources available to us to, kind of check in on the overall, you know, his overall health and kind of the state of his repertoire and pitch profiles. But I think, you know, we have to be mindful of the broken workload from last year, the diminished workload that a ton of guys are seeing, and ensure that we're not being overly nearsighted, but not that we're all, but we're also not being unnecessarily kind of prudent or cautious either.
We're talking to Craig Breslow, the vice president and of pitching and assistant general manager of the Cubs on Inside the Clubhouse. As far, Craig, as far as development, sometimes we get locked into the idea that we're always talking about young guys coming out of an organization, 18, 19, 20 years old, developing into major leaguers or hopefully so over a period of time. But I see your organization and others getting the Tommy Nances of the world, like you mentioned, at age 29 or 30, and recreating their careers by using some of your R&D situations to help them become the pitcher that they could be. Can you talk a little bit about Nance and what went into helping him become the pitcher that he appears to be right now?
Sure. Well, I think one thing it's important that we don't lose sight of is the fact that, that Tommy Nance has been a really good pitcher for a really long time. He's always had the ability to spin two breaking balls. He's always, you know, had kind of that above average arm side run on a sinker. And he's battled some injuries. And I think what we're seeing now is a completely healthy version of Tommy. You know, and his stuff took a significant step forward last year during the shutdown, you know, where he went from a guy that was pitching at, you know, probably 91 to 93 to a guy that you know, we're seeing pitch at 95 to 98. And along that uptick in power, you know, there was a step forward in the breaking balls as well. But you're exactly right. You know, it would be wonderful to be able to kind of predict the timeline for development of these guys. But, you know, Tommy Nance at 30 can get out in the big leagues just like, you know, a handful of guys at 21 or 22. And, you know, the life cycle of a major league pitcher doesn't have a blueprint. So we certainly accept the contributions as guys are ready to make them.
Craig, I think two names that Cub fans have heard a lot about in the recent couple years, perhaps, and have a lot of hope invested in are Braylon Marquez and Rowan Wick. And for various reasons, you know, health-related, they have not been available. Can you give us an update on where they are and how much the team is counting on them moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, both are making progress. You know, obviously, both are guys that we would like to count on, you know, for a while here. You know, I think Rowan over the last probably 6 weeks or so has made significant strides forward. You know, would hope that we'll see him in a competitive environment soon. You know, obviously given the time off, we'll want to be deliberate in his buildup. And Braylon as well, you know, has had a couple of hiccups, but we're confident, you know, that there shouldn't be anything kind of terribly long term, you know, and would like to see both of those guys on the mound here pretty soon.
Craig, you were a successful major league pitcher for a long time, and you, like all of us, are watching what's going on now with the crackdown by Major League Baseball and using anything on the baseball for pitchers. I'll ask two parts to this question. What is the former pitcher think of this and how it would have affected you and other teammates? And what does the man in charge of pitching development in an organization think about this going forward as far as not being able to always get the proper grip on a ball that you want coming out of a hand of somebody that's thrown 98 or 100 miles an hour?
Sure. Well, you know, kind of tackling the first question first, you know, would this have affected my career? Maybe. You know, I certainly, you know, kind of sought to enhance the grip that I had on a baseball. But, you know, it turns out I very rarely wowed anyone with stuff and relied more on, you know, kind of pitch ability, the ability to move a ball around and execute pitches in different, you know, quadrants of the strike zone. You know, and so I'd like to think that I would have had time to adapt and would have had the aptitude to adapt. You know, as it relates to kind of overseeing a pitching infrastructure here, you know, I think very clearly we have to play within the rules. You know, there's been an increase, obviously, in enforcement of this rule. And, you know, throughout the league, I think we saw a little bit of an adjustment period. But I also think things are starting to normalize. And ultimately, that's a good thing. You know, the rule exists. You know, it's the enforcement that has been changed. But, you know, we would be irresponsible if we continue to ignore it. So, you know, obviously our organizational position is we're going to play by the rules.
Craig, tomorrow was the draft, and certainly in the next few weeks you might be welcoming some young pitching prospects into the organization. And I just wonder from a general sense, you know, every organization has a mantra or a philosophy that is followed. So as you introduce new young pitchers into your organization, perhaps, and in the past as you have done this, what do you tell them generally? How do you describe the Cubs' belief in pitching, or what is the foundational about what makes the Cubs unique in terms of their approach to pitching or their philosophy?
Sure. Well, I think the challenge for any kind of development sleeve, whether that's on the position player side or the pitching side, you know, is to try to strike the balance between, you know, kind of uniquely customizing or individualizing development plans with scalability across an entire organization. And I think that's something that we've strived for, and something that I think we've done pretty successfully over the last year or so since we kind of overhauled our development apparatus. You know, so in terms of general philosophies as it relates to pitching, you know, I think we have focused on building out stuff at the lower levels, you know, kind of raising the ceiling of our pitchers, and then transitioning to prioritizing on-field performance. But the way that we go about doing that is absolutely unique to each player. We've got a robust set of resources across multiple departments, our R&D department, our high performance department, and then of course player development. And there's been incredible collaboration and synthesis across all of those groups to identify, you know, what are the glaring deficiencies of each individual pitcher, and how do we kind of chart the best path to Wrigley Field for each one of them.
Craig, my last question to you, and David and I really appreciate your time. I know it's always a busy time for you, in particular now with the organization and draft and all sorts of other things going on. Wondering exactly why there aren't more pitchers that can do what Kyle Hendricks has done during his career, where a guy like Kyle Davies has done successfully in his career, where maybe Craig Breslow did during his career, pitching to the quadrants and getting people out, and organizations' philosophies of signing guys that throw 87 to 88 or 89 or 90 and letting them develop as pitchers rather than 98 plus.
Sure. So I think there are a couple of ways to approach that. The first thing I would say is I believe, you know, pitching from my perspective is buying margin for error. And there are a few ways to do that. Elite command is certainly one of them. Elite stuff is another one. You know, I think with stuff, you have greater margin for error. That's just kind of the physics side of this. But I do think one thing that tends to get glossed over is the fact that guys like Hendricks and Davies and Mills, those guys have outlier traits. The ability to command the ball at the level that they do, kind of with the proficiency that they do, is not something, you know, that is easy to find, and it's even more difficult to teach. I think there's this assumption that if you kind of repeat the task enough, you become an elite strike thrower. But I would look at Kyle Hendricks' strike throwing ability through the same lens as Aroldis Chapman's fastball or Craig Kimbrell's fastball. Those are outlier traits. And so kind of getting back to the point that I made, which says each pitcher is unique and our job is to kind of promote or encourage the strengths and also trying to raise the floor. Trying to give everyone elite command is not necessarily the best path to making them a successful pitcher. So we have to, kind of run them through a comprehensive evaluation and say, is command the right path for you? Is an increase in power, the right path for you? Or is trying to add a pitch to your repertoire? And those may come with equal likelihood, but to simply say that, we'll just ask you to throw more strikes or by practicing more, you become an elite strike thrower. I don't think that's the case. I think command is one of the most difficult things to train. And especially when, on the development side, we lost a year's worth of, having our guys in our facility in direct oversight. We tended to push the development initiatives that we were more confident could be successful. And those were, adding pitches through pitch design initiatives and velocity training.
Great stuff, Craig. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck this weekend with the draft and the rest of the season.
Thank you so much.
Craig Breslow, the assistant general manager for the Cubs in charge of pitching, Bruce. Really interesting way to look at the Kyle. Great question at the end by you. And then the way he explained it, you look at Kyle Hendricks and his ability to locate and command and the kinds of things that are outliers. You compare it to the unique stat is like a Aroldis Chapman fastball or a Craig Kimbrell fastball. And those are the kinds of things that make him unique. Terrific perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of Hendricks, and Craig was phenomenal. He's such a bright guy and so articulate. We love to have him on. I'd like to have him on even more often. But speaking of Hendricks, before we go to the break, this guy has been probably the best pitcher with maybe two or three others in baseball over the last 2 months. Yet with 11 wins and that resume, he doesn't even get a thought about the All-Star game. I think it's a terrible ripoff.
It does seem like that. That's a good point, Bruce. I mean, also, nobody else in the majors has more than 11 victories.
Yeah, it's him and Urias from the Dodgers. That's it, I think. And he said to Hendricks' credit, and he's such a phenomenal guy to listen to after his outings because he's so introspective about everything. He said, winning games is luck sometimes, and some of my games were lucky wins, but you feel good about it no matter what because your team won the game that day. The bullpen doing a great job, he said, helped me get those wins, but those aren't always there for everybody. So that's why, the win statistic for guys that throw six on a common basis now is such a elusive thing and not considered quite as important. For me, going six now is like going 10. I mean, give me six plus and it's like you're a hero. You should get, back page headlines, throws a beauty, throws a gem, six innings of two-run baseball. That's where we're at as far as pitching goes right now.
And how about Craig Breslow, a Yale grad, complimenting Kyle Hendricks, the Dartmouth guy. A lot of Ivy League love being thrown around. I feel smarter just talking about those two guys, Bruce, because of the way they talk about pitching, in Craig's case, and the way that Kyle Hendricks executes it. That's a lot of high-level pitching talk going on there, I imagine, at Wrigley when those two guys get together.
Well, and Breslow is not only smart, but he accomplished the same things during his pitching career. He was more of a Hendricks-type guy who had to concentrate on movement and command rather than velocity. And, again, I still think it's going to take a lot of fortitude for scouting directors and general managers to continue to sign players that have command, that have control over quadrants, that pitch at 85, 86. I think it's going to take a lot of nerve for them to continue to sign those guys who might help you for a long time in an era where you're looking for 98 and just blowing people away.
When you see the top prospects drafted on Sunday in the amateur draft, as we will tomorrow, when they describe them on MLB Network in the first round, the first thing they say about the first five or six pitchers taken is not going to be like, boy, look at the way he goes in and out of that quadrant. Look at his command. It's going to be like, can hit 98 if he needs to, rising fastball, you know, all these kinds of things that are shaped and veered around velocity, because that's the way that the game has gone. That's why what Kyle Hendricks does and what he continues to do consistently is somewhat remarkable. You know, this is a guy who has 10 quality starts in his last 11 outings with a team that, frankly, hasn't been very good of late. So, yeah, it's nice to see a guy like that be the exception to the rule, but be as exceptional as he is.
Absolutely. And when we come back, we talk more White Sox. We have the opportunity to talk to Ryan Newman, the manager of Winston-Salem, and where he plans on putting Eloy Jimenez in his lineup today as the Winston-Salem team plays two games today. Does Eloy get the bat in both? We'll find out coming back.
A lot of excitement down in North Carolina, yes. Eloy Jimenez is going to play for the Winston-Salem Dash. We will talk to the Dash's manager next inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
If they need me, I can do whatever, but I still don't like DH, so keep it in mind.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm David Hall with Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock this morning. That was Eloy Jimenez talking the other day about his role with the White Sox when he returns to Chicago. But until he does, he needs to get healthy. He needs to get at bats, and that process starts tonight down in Winston-Salem with the Dash, the high A affiliate for the Chicago White Sox. And that is where we find on our guest hotline, brought to you by the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, Ryan Newman, the manager of the Winston-Salem Dash, joins us. Good morning, Ryan. Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How excited are you to see what you have in Eloy Jimenez, and what would you say the last 24 hours have been like?
I am extremely excited. Anytime, especially down here in the minor leagues, you put a bat like that in your lineup, hopefully good things are going to happen. it's been a nice last 24 hours. Unfortunately, his start to his rehab assignment got washed out last night by some rain, but we'll get that thing going today. And he's going to DH today in game one of the doubleheader. And then the plan is to get him in left field tomorrow for seven innings.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. I was just going to ask you, what's the directive and how much conversation have you had with La Russa, the coaching staff, certainly Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams on all of this? How much daily conversation do you expect to have with those people as to his continued rehab?
Yeah, we are all in communication. They have a plan in place that James Kruk and his staff has put together up there in Chicago for Eloy's, rehab process. And, we're all getting the daily reports. Carson Wooten, our trainer here, is doing a good job keeping us all updated on what exactly Eloy's doing each day. We're all in close contact because this is a very important piece to our lineup up there in Chicago. So we're excited to see him get on the field tonight and hopefully continue what he's done for us.
Talking with Ryan Newman, the manager of the Winston-Salem Dash, here on The Score. And Ryan, I know you got rained out yesterday. I just wonder if you have been able to observe Eloy Jimenez's swing and how fluid it may or may not look, and if you can detect anything because of the injury. And obviously you've been through this before with players rehabbing, so you kind of are have a trained eye, but what kinds of things you'll be looking for specifically?
Yeah, he hit in the cages yesterday. Unfortunately, we weren't able to hit on the field because of the rain, but in the cage, his swing looked great. He says he feels great. He's raring to go, that's for sure. His energy is off the charts as always. But his swing looked on point. I mean, it's everything I remember from 2018 when I had him in Birmingham and, what I've been watching on TV for the past couple years. So I would say he's ready to go.
When you talk about having managed them already, that's a bonus for both of you as far as communication goes. But how easy is it to communicate with a guy who loves to play baseball every day, who loves to communicate with others and has that smile on his face all the time?
It is, you know, especially, you know, having a, like you said, you mentioned 2018 in Birmingham, managed him before, and knowing Aloy and Aloy knowing me, and, you know, it makes the communication process so much easier. And he knows he can trust me and, you know, be honest with, you know, how he's feeling and, you know, we'll work through this process. But yeah, it's, I'll tell you what, he's only been here for a day, and unfortunately we got rained out, but you could already see his energy, you know, is spilled over to these guys here, and they're excited. You know, he was messing around in the dugout yesterday with them during the rain delay. He was excited to come out, walk out, and see fans in the stands. So, his smile is infectious, and, you know, he's a pleasure to be around.
He is a pleasure to be around, Ryan, and the Chicago is excited to get him back healthy. So I wonder, tomorrow, before he goes into left field for seven innings, do you have to go up to him? Do you have to remind him, Aloy, don't be a hero. You want to stay healthy and in one piece and get back to Chicago in one piece.
Yes, I will remind him, but I am sure that they have already told him to, you know, be cautious in left field and, you know, let's look towards September, October, and not just tomorrow's Sunday 2 o'clock game here in Winston-Salem. So, we're excited to see him out there. And you know, once that competition and his competitive nature takes over, it's going to be tough to kind of put that on a leash. But I'm sure he's aware, and I will definitely remind him.
We're talking to Ryan Newman, the manager of the Winston-Salem Dash, the High A team for the Chicago White Sox. Getting ready to play a couple games today, make up a rain-up, and having the debut at Winston-Salem for Eloy Jimenez. And from the coaching standpoint, Ryan, how difficult is it for you to tell anybody, and you already had Eloy, to, like, not go full out if you don't have to, or make a great dive for a play or a great throw because you're trying to protect yourself? Seems like it's kind of incompatible to what players do and their instinct to compete.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's different, you know, from the managing aspect, but it's also just different for Aloy and the player aspect, you know, because, you know, like I said, you know, once that competition takes over and you're ready to compete, you're going to do everything you can to help your ball club. But we also have to be aware that there's a bigger picture, and this is just, you know, step one in his rehab process. And, you know, we have to be smart about, you know, it's down here in the minor leagues, we're all about development and trying to get these guys ready for Chicago. And, you know, that's exactly what we're doing here with Aloy. You know, we don't want to push him and have any setbacks for him. And, you know, we just got to be smart, and he's got to be smart, and we'll make sure that happens.
Ryan, before we let you go, there are two other guys that you work with that I'd like to know if you could give us a quick update on, because they're curious for a couple different reasons. But Yoki Cespedes, obviously a prospect who's down there hitting the cover off the baseball, it seems like, from afar. And secondly, the pitching coach, Danny Farquhar, who, as you know, White Sox fans will remember, overcame the big health scare in the dugout and now is on his way back in the game as a pitching coach going that route. What can you tell us about those two guys?
So Cespedes, he is a special player. And what makes him even more fun to coach and be around is he's a special person, too. He has all the makeup qualities. He plays his tail off. The effort he gives on the field is tremendous. The power you see in his bat, the bat speed, the running speed, he's working back. He's been only DHing so far. He's working back from a little shoulder thing. He's on a throwing program. You know, we're hoping to get him in the outfield here in the next couple weeks after the Futures game. But, I mean, his arm strength is incredible, too. I mean, this kid has all the tools, and it's going to be exciting, and he plays the game the right way. I'm glad you asked about him because he's a fun guy to talk about. He's just a fun guy to be around. He's a great teammate. And I think he's elevated the play of a lot of the other players when he showed up here. So, I can't wait to watch this kid's career take off.
And in closing with you, and David and I really appreciate your time today, how is Danny doing, and what is it like coaching with him on a daily basis?
Danny is awesome. Danny is doing great. His health, first of all, he's doing outstanding. He's got his family here. He is really taken to this coaching process, and his energy is off the charts. The pitching staff has responded really well to him. They love him. And I think from a game planning aspect and just, how to attack hitters, he has been awesome for this group of pitchers out here. And, Danny's going to be fun to watch. Like I said before, his energy level is awesome, and it's infectious, and I think it's shown with our pitching staff so far this year.
Ryan, thanks so much for your time. Good luck this weekend and the rest of the season. And I think that it sounds like Eloy's in good hands, so you can deliver him to the White Sox in a few weeks' time.
I will absolutely do my best. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Ryan Newman, the manager for the Winston-Salem Dash, the High A affiliate for the Chicago White Sox. Big weekend, Bruce. Big moment tonight. Doubleheader for the Dash and Eloy Jimenez DHing today. I think the bigger news from a Sox perspective, Bruce, is he's playing left field tomorrow. Seven innings of anxiety for Sox fans.
I think the reporters in both of us, our eyebrows went up quite a bit when we heard that. My assumption, and it was obviously incorrect, was that he was going to DH for a while just to get his legs, arms, and everything else going before you put him in the funky area of playing the outfield again. And again, I've been one of those, people who have watched Eloy's career from the time he was a young Cub player. And knowing that staying on the field was the only challenge that this guy has, because he is an all-star hitter, a slugger who's already proved that he's going to be a star hitter in the league. But the other parts of the game are a challenge, and staying on the field has been the number one challenge for Eloy Jimenez.
Bruce, he is an elite power bat. You look at his numbers when he is on the field and when he is healthy, and his early career numbers put him on a path that make him an elite power hitter. There's no doubt about that. It's not an ounce of an exaggeration there. So I've said this, hide his glove. I don't understand playing seven innings in a Class A game, coming back from an injury. You're trying to preserve him in it for a team that has World Series aspirations. So yeah, my eyebrows rose and they arched, and they almost, I almost like, oh, I can't believe he's playing minor league outfield. Why?
Yeah, well, I think it's a great topic, because to Eloy, he is a all-around baseball player, a guy that wants to be out in the field at age 24, 25, now feeling that he can contribute best by being the left fielder on the team. It's not our call, but it's certainly incumbent upon us to talk about the reality of this guy having tremendous problems staying on the field because of injuries that incurred by him throwing his body around most of the time, either running or running into walls or climbing walls. I mean, you love the competitiveness, you love the joy, but the end result is, I don't know.
You know, it was also great to hear a positive update on Cespedes and Danny Farquhar, who had the brain hemorrhage in 2018 and is coming back. I spent some time with Danny and his family, that summer after he was on his way back to the Sox. So like to hear those positive updates, Bruce. Great job getting Ryan Newman on the phone with us, because he shared a lot of good, encouraging news, including the surprise of Eloy Jimenez playing the outfield. But when we come back, Bruce, we want to play one of our favorite games now. Should he stay or should he go? We'll let you know who we're asking that about next inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
As the MLB trade deadline approaches, both sides of town have some decisions to make. So, who should stay and who should go?
Should I stay or should I go now?
With Bruce Levine and David Haw on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
Here on The Score, Bruce Levine, David Haw for the final segment. And yes, it is that time again, Bruce. Should I stay or should I go? I'm not going to sing. I don't have your melodious voice to hit those notes. But we get the idea. Today's player, should he stay or should he go? Should Chris Bryant stay or should Chris Bryant go? What say you?
I say, what can you get for Chris Bryant? What will get other than weighing the qualifying offer of waiting for him to go to free agency and then offering him a qualifying offer, which is, in other terms, a contract for $19 million for 1 year.
Yep.
And if he rejects, then you get a second, third, or fourth round pick for Mr. Bryant.
Probably from second.
Another team.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
High second. Probably a second. Depends. Yeah, depends.
It depends. There are some other qualifiers in that. But nonetheless, sure. Where do you go with Chris Bryant at this point? And is it incumbent upon Jed Hoyer to get the most he can for him at this point? Or not trade him if they don't get real value back?
I think, Bruce, I probably will sound as wishy-washy as I will sound on any topic when I talk about Chris Bryant, okay? Because it's hard for me to remove that sort of sentimentality or emotion from the equation. I'm going to acknowledge that up front. It's not always that difficult for me to do that because I think you just have an obligation to do that most of the time. I think Chris Bryant is my favorite Cub. I think he represents a sports organization as well as any young man ever could, right? And if you're the Cubs and you still care about winning and you're investing in the future, you're going to spend money, I still think that it would behoove you to do whatever you can within your power to re-sign him to a long-term contract. He's worth the investment, but I understand these realities, so you have to explore them. The only thing I would say about Jed Hoyer, should he stay or should he go in terms of Chris Bryant, is you have to make sure that you're getting a clear cut, you're winning the trade in your mind if he does go. That means top pitching prospect. That means probably two other prospects that you can envision, you know, being guys that are going to be major leaguers. But I think the top pitching prospect is the one I would demand in return if you're trading Chris Bryant.
Yeah, I think it's well thought out on your part, David, but I don't think it's realistic with 2 months to go in a season and $6 million owed on his contract as of around July 31st. That you're going to get as much as you would in the past. I just don't think that as much as I believe in selling high and buying low, and Chris Bryant has had, for the most part, an outstanding season. He had that three-week period in June where he really dropped off. But you know, he's come back strong and obviously off the bench yesterday with a big double to drive in a few runs. He can help somebody win a pennant or a World Series.
I agree. I agree.
And if I'm the other GM, I have to say, boy, that's Chris Bryant or Alec Baum at third base. I think Bryant can help us win a World Series.
How bad do you want to win?
I think he might get more than people anticipate out there. Right now, most projections are the Cubs would get a couple of highly thought of prospects in other organizations, a 6 or an 8 or a 9. But as we talked about earlier in the show, how good are those guys? How good is the organization's depth in it when it comes to prospects?
It's totally subjective.
It's a great unknown.
Yeah, it is. I would look at it this way, Bruce, if I'm the Cubs. This is the way I would try to relate it to people listening. So you like where you live and you like your house. But if it's the seller's market, and you think somebody talks you into the idea, well, you know what? You might want to see what you get for your house if you put it on the market. And you put a for sale sign in the front yard, and you get blown away by an offer. All of a sudden, you're moving. And you may not want to move. And you may not feel like it's you're kind of uncertain. You're cautious, and you don't know if it's the right move. But you're moving anyway because you got an offer you just could not refuse. I went Jed Hoyer to say yes to Chris Bryant in terms of a trade only if he gets an offer he can't refuse, because then it makes sense for the next great Cub team, as he put it. Because if he wants to think in those terms, you could also justify paying Chris Bryant in the offseason to be part of the next great Cub team. But if you're going to trade him, you better get some great prospects in return.
Well, I'll turn that around on you, David, by saying how badly would it impact them being able to sign Chris Bryant to an extension if you traded him to Philadelphia and he becomes a free agent in November? Is that separation permanent in the mind of the player, in the mind of the team, in the mind of the franchise? Are you able to go back and do an Aroldis Chapman like the Yankees did, trading him to the Cubs, them winning a World Series, and then immediately signing him to a 5-year, $85 million contract after the season? Is that a possibility with Chris Bryant, or is there too much he said, she said in this relationship for that to occur again?
I think it's more realistic. I think it's unrealistic to the short answer. I think it's more realistic to think that you could probably sign him once he goes to free agency and outbid whoever's trying to bid against you than it is to think that he would come back to you, because when you leave a team and they trade you, especially a player that you draft and develop and you win with, and then you trade him, I think mentally you're divorced. And I think it's very difficult to go back and to say, all right, I'm going to reopen this door that I painfully closed just a few months ago. And I think that would factor in a way that's very hard to articulate and relate to, but I don't think it's something to ignore. So I think that's far-fetched, and I think it would be, yeah, Chapman did it. There have been other players who have tried, but it's the exception, not the rule.
You know, that's interesting. It reminds me of a conversation I had with Greg Maddux when he had a no-trade with the Cubs and the Dodgers wanted him, and Jim Henry came to him and said, will you waive your no trade? And I said to Maddux, why did you do it? You wanted to stay with the Cubs. He said, if any GM or front office person comes to a player who has a no trade and asks them if they want to be traded, they should say yes, because that means they don't want them with them any longer, and it's time for you to move on. I thought it was a tremendous perspective by Maddux, and I think it also solidifies something that you just said about once you trade a player, he's divorced from you, and in most cases, mentally, it's permanent.
And we hear the joy in Chris Bryant's voice and have heard it throughout the years about how much he loves being a Cub. If that is no longer the case and he's an ex-Cub, can you really revisit that? You can't go back again. I don't know that you can go home again that quickly, Bruce. Maybe one day, but not in a couple months.
Adam Studzinski, a job well done always as our producer. We thank Craig Breslow, assistant general manager of the Cubs. Ryan Newman, the manager of the Winston-Salem team, talking about Eloy. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, writing Cubs and Sox every day at MLB Bruce Levine at gmail.com.
Bruce, great job today. Great job all week. Keep up the good work. We will talk to you next week on the Mullenhaw Show. I'll be there Monday morning, 5 o'clock, as always. Thanks for listening on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Saturday Suckage is next.